It's MRCTV's public service announcement with Brittany Hughes and Eric Shiner.
Welcome to the MRCTV podcast. I'm Eric Shiner. Brittany Hughes is off this week, but we do have a fill-in guest that a lot of people may have heard of. A certain author and, of course, president of the Media Research Center, Brent Bozell, joins us to talk about his new book, Unmasked, Big Media's War Against Trump. This came out yesterday. Folks can find it on Amazon, all the booksellers. And here to talk about the book is Brent Bozell. Thanks for joining us. You actually made it down to the studio to join the podcast. It's about time we get
heard
you
about,
down here.
I've heard about this legendary podcast, so here I am.
So let's talk about this book. It came out yesterday, and it really looks at the media's war on Trump. And you start way back at the beginning from the time that Trump actually announces that he's going to be running for office and how the media treated him from there. And you even note in the foreword that you were a bit skeptical of Trump's announcement yourself.
Well, I told him he could never win. You know, I'm one of those few people. It's kind of funny, isn't it, Eric, how everyone today says, well, I knew Trump was going to win. Of course I knew. Let me tell you, I'll be very honest. I told him, he asked me, and I told him he can't win. But I did tell him he should run for I gave him three reasons for running. One was because he had an itch he had to scratch. He'd been talking about it for years. And the second one was that I thought that he needed to get all of his skeletons out, and God knows, we knew he had lots of them.
There was
and,
a few.
Yeah, just get him out of the closet and you know, get it all done with one campaign, and then he could come back and run a second time. And the third reason was, and he knew I'd endorse Ted Cruz, but I remember the Peter Grace Commission during the Reagan years, where Reagan turned to a businessman to try to make sense of the United States federal government and the swamp. And Peter Grace was just, I mean, Reagan was too busy destroying the Soviet Union to really implement that. But he turned to Peter Grace as a businessman because he felt only a businessman could do it. And I suggested to Trump that my President Cruz would set up a Trump commission and ask Trump to fix the government, because I figured there's no one who likes firing people more than Donald Trump. And can you imagine him, you know, 500,000 times saying you're fired to worthless bureaucrats? So, but the fact of the matter is that it was at that point that you started this process where they had ignored him. But because he was a sheer marketing genius, they had to pay attention to him when he announced. And as we discuss in the book, we recount in the book, the initial reaction to him was laughter. I mean, they just thought that he was making a mockery of everything and he would go away. Once it became apparent that this guy could win, then it was a jihad against him, where they tried everything in their power to defeat him. And obviously, when they didn't succeed. And it was at that point that they became committed to his removal. And that's where they've been ever since. So the book had to start during the campaign, because you have to see the continuum that began from the day he came down that escalator to today.
But they seemed to like him as a joke when he came down the escalator. They gave him quite a bit of coverage early on.
I think because they thought he was making a fool of Republicans. This guy was a celebrity. So he was known to everyone as a celebrity. And they treated him that way until he started talking. And now, you know, he said quite a lot of things that were uncomfortable to some, offensive to others. So the media went from laughing at him, laughing with him, to laughing at him. And they went in that turn to open hostility. But no, they thought he was on a fool's errand at the start of this. And they thought it was all doing nothing but tipping the apple cart for Republicans, which is what they liked.
You called it a jihad, an all-out jihad. Have we ever seen the media aggressively? I mean, there's some numbers from the Media Research Center, 90% negative coverage by the news media through 2018. Have we ever seen the media so aggressively go after a sitting president?
Well, I can say that with absolute certainty that in the history of the MRC, going back to the Reagan years, the answer is no. I can say with probable certainty that is probably in the history of the Republic. We've never seen anything like it. This is a man, I've made this comment before, he could cure cancer and he'd be attacked for not curing AIDS. There's nothing he can do where he won't be savaged for what either what he did or if what he did is so remarkable. They just switched to something he didn't do. If you look at the coverage during the campaign, it was consistently over 90% negative. And think about that, month after month after month, 90%, 91%, 93%. I mean, that's almost unanimously negative. You got to the first month of 2017, the honeymoon month. Everybody gets a honeymoon month. His honeymoon was a negative coverage that dropped to 85%. That's a honeymoon for the guy. When the results of the tax cuts came out and suddenly you saw this booming economy, and it was the same month that he also responded to the genocide in Syria with a military strike, his approval rating, the negative coverage from the media dropped astronomically to 83%. Other than that, they're at 90%, 91%. They will not give him any, and we talk about this in the book, that if the news is bad, they augment it by a factor of 10. If the news is good, they just simply ignore it.
Could anyone else have survived this kind of media onslaught the way Trump has? When you look at the Republican candidates that were running in 2016, you mentioned your Cruz supporter beforehand. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is quite an attack. And one of the things in the book is you break it down on many levels. We'll get to some of those levels in a moment. But I mean, just the fact that he has overcome a lot of this negative coverage, despite this negative coverage.
There's something that Trump understood, that 99% of Republicans don't understand or don't want to understand, which is the media are more disliked by the American people than Trump was. And Trump understood this. He understood that if he picked a fight with the media, he was going to win. Now, I can't tell you how many times Republicans have come to me and, with gnashing of teeth and beating up breasts and crocodile tears and saying, my goodness, look how the media are coming after us because, we're advocating tax cuts or smaller government, and look what they do and what should we do? And your response is, get your big boy pants on, stop whining, stop complaining. Take them on. Fight back. The American people will be on your side. Stop being such cowards. Trump understood this. And Trump understood not just that he should fight back, but he understood that if he made an issue of it, that he would win that argument. And so he made it him against the media. And what that also did was to lance the boil and show what was under the surface of the press all along. This arrogance, this oozing elitism, this disdain for conservatives. Remember that wonderful line in the Washington Post about the poor, the poor, uneducated, and easy to command types. There was the late Henry Hyde had this great term for the left's view of conservatives, that they were the quote unquote the great unwashed, and that's the disdain that the press has for the Trump supporters. Trump played it, and he made it come out, and he picked a fight with it, and he won the presidency.
One of the things he picked a fight with, and you mentioned in the book, is fake news existed before Trump. It will probably exist after Trump, but boy, they really hate it when he calls them that.
Yeah, fake. There are three kinds of problematic press. There is the biased media, where somebody distorts a story to get his or her personal opinion into it. There is false news, which is a story that is filed by a reporter who doesn't know it's not true. Then there's fake news, when they know it's not true and they still put it out there. You've seen historically, we've seen examples of this, way back in the 80s, it was NBC with the exploding GM truck where they wanted to do something against that company. You had Rathergate with Dan Rather trying to subvert the election, the re-election of President Bush. You've had other examples, but in the era of Trump, and we document this in the book, it is example after example after example of stories that were filed that simply were not true, that were filed in the morning. There was a reaction against them. They were taken down that night. In some cases, reporters were actually fired for doing it. But this is not just one story or two stories. You know, there are probably 50 examples of stories that were filed that were not true. So when he talks about the fake news media, you know, I initially was a little bit uncomfortable with that because it seemed a little bit hyperbolic. It's not hyperbole. It's really there.
It's so delicious to watch the reaction to it, though, when he says it.
Oh, God.
I got to admit, I sit back. I have some fun when he's like, no, I'm not taking a question from you. You're fake news.
Go ahead. Sir, can you state, Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically,
she's asking a question.
Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
You're attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you give us a question?
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you state categorically?
You are fake news.
Sir,
go ahead.
Can you state?
And the look on their face and the outrage that they have.
The one thing you can't see, Eric, is when Trump is at his rallies and he makes these disparaging comments about the press, and then he points. And he's kind of pointing at the TV set, but he points and he says, look at them back there. Look at them all back there. And he's pointing to the line of reporters in the back, and he just starts poking fun at them. Well, you can't see because, you know, you the viewer on television, can't see. But you can just imagine these reporters are just fuming. I've done events where I've had reporters, you know, having to cover it. And then you have some fun with them. They can't go anywhere. They've got to cover it. They've got to be there. And just to watch the expressions on their faces. And I've done that. And Trump does it every single day. He knows there's smoke coming out of their ears. Not a damn thing they can do about it. They've got to cover it.
And it's so funny. The media likes to portray Trump as thin-skinned, but they seem just as thin-skinned as when he calls them out, their reaction is usually very over the top. And you see people like Brian Stelter and whatnot go on the air and defend the media.
Yeah,
oh, no, we're not like that at all.
Yeah, there's that one moniker about the media about comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. I never know where the hell, who gave them that power? Who gave them that authority to believe they had the right to do that? Well, speaking of rights, they also believe about the public's right to know. That's how they defend everything they do, the public's right to know. Okay, when it comes to a right and where it comes to the public's right to know, they will not allow any criticism of themselves. And you don't have a right to know anything about them. How dare you question them? You can't turn the tables on them. You can't apply their same worldview on themselves because they're above it. See, Eric, they're better than we are. So when a Donald Trump takes them on, yeah, I mean, it just they go nuts. They go absolute nuts. They are the most thin-skinned because look, they insist on being adored. It's not the newspapers, the reporters of the past, the gumshoe reporters who were interested in reporting the who, what, when, and where on a story and filing a story. That's not it anymore. It is production now, and they are the lead characters. They are the ones. This is why Jim Acosta, in our ranking, got the number one worst journalist in America. It's not that he's trying to write a bad story. He wants to be the story. It's all about, it's not about Trump, it's about himself going after Trump. And this is the, again, I go back to it, the arrogance of the press.
In fact, you do have a list, you referenced it, of the journalists that are the most aggressive in attacking Trump. Acosta is number one. Give us two and three while we have a moment here.
Well, number two is the duo of Mika and
Mika
Joe.
And Joe.
Mika and Joe, I mean, they're just so strange. Joe, once upon a time, was a great, pretty good, damn good conservative, a strong libertarian type. And, you know, he's done stuff for the MRC. And I've done stuff together with him in the past. But, you know, he is the former Republican, conservative Republican from Florida. And as we point out in this book, he's none of those things. He's no longer a Republican. He's no longer a congressman. He's no longer a conservative. And the interesting thing was, they were big Trump supporters at the start of this campaign. But what happened? They said something and Trump criticized them and they went nuts and they've never forgiven him for saying that, which is par for the course. Look, I've been attacked by Trump. And who hasn't been attacked by Trump in a tweet? And Trump says something about
me. So far, I've been pretty lucky. Well, he hasn't gone after me.
Well, I tell the story in the book about why he went after me and the things he said. And it's rather kind of funny. My wife didn't think it was very funny. But you know, it is what it is. Number three is George Stephanopoulos. George Stephanopoulos is a man who really... has been, I think, unethical in that he should have recused himself from the entire campaign. This is a man who is a $75,000 donor to the Clinton Foundation. This is a guy who worked for the Clintons. This is a guy who's tied to the hip to Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. He should never have been involved in the campaign that where she was the nominee. I guess never should have been involved. He should have recused himself. You know, this is a guy, as we point out, Mark Levin has got 5 number one bestsellers. I guess now it's number 6, and everybody should read his book because it's a good one. But the total amount of airtime given to Mark Levin for all of his best-selling books is 0 seconds. Never been interviewed. James Comey comes out with his book to attack Trump. He was given an entire hour. It's unheard of. An entire hour to attack Donald Trump by Stephanopoulos. So it's that kind of reporting that makes a mockery of reporting. So he's number 3.
Well, yeah, but George Stephanopoulos also represents kind of a cadre of reporters you'll see in mainstream media journalism that worked on Democratic campaigns, that worked for Democratic presidents that now become quote-unquote journalists for mainstream media organizations.
Years ago, we had a feature that we called the revolving door, which showed people who were coming from Republican political campaigns into the media or leaving the media, going into Republicans versus Democrats going into the media or leaving the media and going into the Democratic circles. You know, one outnumbered the other one by 10-1. And it really did show just how populated the media were. Whether it was Kennedy liberals or Carter liberals or Clinton liberals, this is where political operatives go with their next careers after leaving politics. Or they will be in the media, but come a time for a campaign, they take a break from the media to go to work for the Democratic candidate,
right,
and then go back to the media. So you know, that revolving door is there, and it's shocking. We did this many years ago, but people have done this since. And it's there.
Well, it's one of the things the MRC does to question journalists. And as you mentioned, you know, one of the ways Trump is getting under their skin is by calling them fake news and having people question them. When you break down the prongs of attack in this book that the media has done on Trump, one of the things that you mentioned is the anonymous sources. Yeah. And they don't like being questioned on those either. And we've seen a lot of that, especially in regards to the collusion delusion coverage on Russia.
You know, there's a rule in journalism, a cardinal rule in journalism, about having two sources. And having two sources, independent sources, before you decide to have a story. There is that situational ethic, where it is absolutely mandatory for your source to be anonymous, i.e., if it's cited, the person could get killed by the mob, whatever
right.
It might be. Barring that absolute need, then that source should be made public. What you've seen in the Trump administration, in his Trump years, you've seen this nonstop avalanche of news stories against him, based on, don't you love this? we spoke with 17 reported people, you know, based on interviews with 22 people. But you don't cite a single damn one. But the reader's supposed to...
And that's the story that's taken down for being inaccurate later when he calls it out.
Yes, yes. Remember the one about there was one story about how 17 intelligence agencies had determined that, you know, Trump had done something that was illegal with the Russians. Well, it turned out not to be 17. It turned out to be 3. And 3 that said it. The other 14 didn't say that. And so what the media then said was, well, it wasn't all of them. Well, no, it was only a fraction of them.
But that story remained up for a long time, before it was corrected.
And so as we go through all these stories that were these fake news stories, you'll see time and again, over and over again, it's that quote unquote, that anonymous source. So who is that anonymous source? Look, it can be the reporter talking to somebody down the hallway at the water cooler. Technically, that's a source. When the person says, I know of something, well, how do you know that person has firsthand evidence, or it isn't sixth-hand evidence having come from 5 other water coolers throughout the week? You have no understanding of this. What they go with, Eric, the goal is to get a story out. So the moment you say to me, you know, I heard Donald Trump had sex with a horse, bam, you got a news story.
Yeah, well, no, you can take the most recent thing where Trump walked out of the meeting with Pelosi and Schumer on infrastructure, and they immediately ran with 2 Democratic insiders say that Trump was angry and shouted and left, and then Trump himself claims he wasn't. Other people there claim he wasn't, but that story ran for a good 48 hours.
That's right. And that's perfect, Eric. That's perfect, because if you're going to run that story saying that 2 sources said it.
Democratic sources. Yeah, they actually named Democratic sources.
What you say, if you're a reporter worth your salt, you say, according to Democratic sources, 2 that were there, he ran out. However, according to the following 6 people on the record, he did not. Now, you've told the truth at that point, and the viewer, the reader, can make up his own mind, and the viewer slash the reader is going to say, okay, I got 6 people on the record here, 2 people I've never heard of, I don't know who they are here. Who am I going to believe? So what do? They disregard the 6 who are on the record saying it wasn't true, and they just, the story is the 2 Democratic.
Well, it's by omission, and you point this out in your book. You have a chapter, Good News is No News.
Yeah. The bias by omission is much, much more dangerous than the bias by commission. In the bias by commission, you can see a story that's wrong, that's been slanted, that might be untrue, whether it's fake, might be false, whatever. But that's the story you know about. The bias by omission is a story that was never covered. You know, it's for 25 years, the Chinese didn't know that man had landed on the moon. That was far more than a story that might say they cheated on their way there. The omission story is what really scares me, because when you take this to the macro, in a democracy, how well can a democracy operate when the voter it does not have information provided to him, and what isn't provided has been twisted? It really does threaten the democratic process. And I think, by the way, the media are involved in something that I think is threatening democracy itself in their jihad to take him out, calling it news.
Calling their jihad news.
Calling their industry news. It's not they're not a news media.
It's activism.
Look, close your eyes and listen to a CNN report, and then to ask yourself, who is this that's giving this report? CNN or Nancy Pelosi's office? It's the same thing. I was doing a show for Stu Barney one day, and we were talking about CNN. That was his old network, and you know, Stuart does not. You see the pain on his face. He's one of the very first reporters for CNN to see what's happened to his network. Does not. It's pretty troubling for him. But we were talking about this, and just for the heck of it, I opened up my smartphone just to see what was on CNN. And I believe it was 16 stories, 15 of them dealt with variations of the theme of Trump using the S word to describe some Muslim countries.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was 14 different stories. A 15th story was an attack on him on something else. The 16th story, and it was rated like number 7 or something like that, was an American attack on Syrian air bases in a military strike.
Right, the real news was
It was a military strike, and that was like number 7. Every other story was an attack on Donald Trump. So this is the CNN audience is now 767,000. Average. That's 0.2%. It's not a news network, and it's not being watched by anyone who isn't in an airport or at a doctor's office. Now, you say, well, so what? Because CNN.com, that's got 20 million readers. And people have to understand.
The website is much more powerful than the broadcast entity at this point.
Fox is the number one on cable. Fox News is gazillion times bigger than Fox. The real power is away from the Klieg lights. You know, we all like to be in Klieg lights. It's the dot-coms. That's where the audience is.
It's on the internet. It's what people are sharing. Yeah. It's things of that nature. Before I let you go, we talked about some of the omission. Good news is no news. They don't like to talk about job numbers. They don't like to talk about economic growth on the mainstream media. How much does that play? You said they want to keep their viewers uninformed. How much is that part of a plan playing into the elections as we look to 2020, not highlighting the coverage of any successes of this administration, but again, focusing on this attack, this jihad, as you call it?
You know, I remember when Bush 41 was in office and the GDP announcement came out, and it was 2.3%. And Dan Rather did this story and just eviscerated him for how bad the economy was. Then Bill Clinton became president, and the economy was 2.3%. And Dan Rather's report was, the economy is steady as she goes. And it was a complete different read on the same number. Well, you know, with the economy, when Obama had the economy and it would hit 2%, you know, it was a glorious news day. When it got down to 1%, it wasn't covered. Now it's over 3%, and it's ignored by the media. They want to ignore it, but let me tell you, the hat's out of the bag for this one. The cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
What did I just screw that one up? No, it is with the public is on to the press. 91% of the public knew by the end of the campaign, the 26th campaign, that the media were out to get Donald Trump. I've often said that it doesn't matter how liberal the media are. I can't stop a reporter from being a liberal. What matters only is if they are believed. First of all, you can be as liberal as you want to and be a good journalist. Tim Russert, Sam Donaldson on a good day. Yeah, you can have Bernie Shaw, the anchor for CNN, before the first Gulf War, when he became a celebrity. And then it all changed. But before the first Gulf War, he was the quintessentially good reporter, a liberal. But he knew where to park his biases. He knew how to offset them. He knew how to search for the other side of the story. That's what makes a good journalist. I think that in today's world, the public knows that what they're getting is so much garbage from the press. Even better news is that they can't keep the lid on the toothpaste anymore. It's not like China where they couldn't tell people. People couldn't know that man landed on the moon.
Right.
You've got the internet. You've got social media. You've got what we're doing right now, podcasting. The Trump people have to be smart, and they are smart, in using the alternative forms of media. He won on Twitter. He won using Twitter and ignoring CBS News. This time, Twitter is out to get him. So there's a real question, and I've talked to top people in the administration. They have a real concern that Twitter's going to try to shadow ban him in this campaign. It's not the very top, because they understand that this can destroy the business, the Twitter business model. But when you get to that second tier, people who don't own any stock at Twitter, they could care less. They are so committed in the destruction of Donald Trump. No president has ever had been faced with this, not even Ronald Reagan on his worst day. But they'll stop at nothing. So I've asked Trump people, are you looking at alternative forms of communications? And the answer is they're looking at a number of them. It's going to be very interesting.
So this is a campaign that could not only be attacked by the traditional mainstream media, the Trump administration would be attacked by them, but also on social media.
Oh, it's not just social media, Corey. Look, the censorship that's taking out there, Eric, is not just, you know, Amazon and Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Google. It's the service companies. It's Apple. It's Microsoft. It's banking companies. Chase Manhattan that won't process checks. It's PayPal. There are all sorts of companies that are lining up, either genuflecting with the hard left, or willingly doing the bidding on the hard left. This is serious stuff. I mean, across the board, they are joining in the censorship. It's aimed proximately at Trump, but it's much bigger than Trump, and it's much bigger than this country. This is a worldwide censorship. It's a conversation for another day, but it should scare the hell out of every conservative.
All right. The book is Unmasked, Big Media's War Against Trump. The author, Brent Bozell, along with Tim Graham here from Newsbusters, worked on this book with you. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Hopefully it comes out today. So hopefully maybe by tomorrow we'll see it on the bestseller
list. Buy many, many copies.
Brent Bozell, thanks for being with us. And thanks for joining us for the MRC TV podcast. I'm Eric Shiner. Be sure to catch up on all the old MRC TV podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Until next week, see you then.